Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 22, 2021. South Sudanese human rights defenders face threats of abductions.
If you believe the authorities, everything is copacetic, everything is fine and well in South Sudan, and nobody should have any complaints. But we know that's not true. We have documented this. Other organizations have documented what's going on. And the UN has documented what's going on.
And six foreigners are arrested for illegal logging in eastern Equatorial State.
We have arrested six people from Mongolia area, as I said at the moment. They're already under the custody in Nimule. These are our neighbors from the Uganda.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The European Union has imposed restrictive measures on 11 individuals and 4 entities responsible for serious human rights violations and abuses in various countries around the world, including South Sudan. The global human rights sanctions regime has targeted General Gabriel Moses Lokujo for what the Union calls serious human rights violations in South Sudan. EU says General Lokujo ordered, in particular, extrajudicial, summary or arbitrary executions and killings in May 2020. The report further said 3 officers from the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition were abducted and executed on the orders of Major General Lokujo. General Lokujo defected in September 2020 from the SPLM-IO to the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, and he is accused of ensuing clashes in and around Moroto Training Center in central Equatorial State, displacing families in Kajukeji County. The European Council says Major General Lokujo's forces remain in the area where several further clashes have been reported, and the safety and security of civilians continue to be in danger, end of quote. Still on human rights issues in South Sudan, the watchdog Frontline Defenders has released a 43-page report documenting testimonies from South Sudanese human rights defenders who fled their countries due to harassments, intimidations, and threats to life. Adam Shapiro is the Frontline Defenders' head of communications and visibility. He says 14 human rights defenders from South Sudan are living in fear of abductions in Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania. He says the report entitled No Refuge, South Sudan's Targeting of Human Rights Defenders Outside the Country, seeks to inform policymakers at the UN Security Council about the problems facing human rights defenders from South Sudan. He says donor countries funding projects in South Sudan should put pressure on the government of South Sudan to respect the work of journalists, civil society activists, and human rights defenders.
We are using this report to keep the pressure on and to push on the council members to approve the renewal of the mandate. Beyond that, we do believe that the government of South Sudan has, you know, obviously a responsibility to protect and guard the human rights of its citizens, but also to ensure that human rights defenders and civil society in the country can operate freely and can carry out their work without fear of reprisal, intimidation, harassment, abuse, imprisonment, etc. And the government of South Sudan relies on the international community. This year marks 10 years since independence. And, I think it's fair to say that there was a lot of participation from various stakeholders in the international community to help secure the independence of the country and the peace process. So we believe that it's not time now, 10 years after independence, to just walk away, that these stakeholders, these other countries, need to keep up the pressure on the government and start speaking up more profoundly for human rights and human rights defenders in South Sudan.
The government of South Sudan has on several occasions consistently denied that they don't harass human rights defenders, they don't harass journalists, they don't harass civil society groups. Did you speak to to the government of South Sudan to get their reaction on the testimonies that you got from the human rights defenders who fled the country?
We plan to speak to the diplomatic representatives of the country in general, but also specifically to also the authorities in the neighboring countries, in Uganda and Kenya especially, where defenders have faced attack and yet should find protection as refugees first and foremost. And then, of course, as human rights defenders, they should have the right to continue to do their work safely. So there's multiple layers of who this is targeted at in terms of advocacy. I do expect that, as you've said, you know, with other reports, human rights reports that have come out, with what the UN Commission has found, if you believe the authorities, everything is copacetic. Everything is fine and well in South Sudan, and nobody should have any complaints. But we know that's not true. We have documented this. Other organizations have documented what's going on, and the UN has documented what's going on. To hear their denial doesn't really achieve much at this point.
How many human rights defenders are we talking about who have fled their home country of South Sudan and are living in the neighboring countries of Kenya, Uganda, or Tanzania?
We were able to speak to 14 human rights defenders who were willing to speak to us and who were willing to give, you know, an accounting of their experiences. But we know there are more. Exactly how many, we're not certain. We do know that some defenders, including some very famous cases of South Sudanese human rights defenders, have become refugees in Kenya and Uganda and then went, you know, for resettlement in other countries because they were still under attack even while they were in these refugee countries. So there are some who are still in the neighboring countries, and that number could be dozens, if not more. And then there are others who've actually been able to, you know, find safety, more safety and security in other countries, either in the West. I know I've heard of people who've gone to Tanzania, who've gone to South Africa and some other countries. So, you know, what we do see is that, unfortunately, because of the security situation for human rights defenders in South Sudan, choosing to leave the country and become a refugee, which is not an easy decision and which is very traumatic, unfortunately, is the safety measure that human rights defenders, you know, sometimes are forced to take. And that itself is a problem for the future of South Sudan.
When I read through your report, I saw some recommendations whereby you are pointing at some Western countries to do something to address the issues of human rights abuses in South Sudan. It's one thing to write these recommendations, and the reality on the ground is that most of these Western countries who are based in South Sudan, through their embassies, are also careful about their national interests. How would you ensure that they will take action?
I think there's a possibility. I mean, we have to remember, South Sudan is still highly reliant on international aid and investment, and needs even more. And in particular, obviously, the oil sector is the area where the government is seeking to expand, but also in other areas, too. We know that the EU has been very involved in providing financial support for peace and stability in South Sudan. But you can't have peace and stability without human rights. This has, you know, been proven time and time again. This is the official position, effectively, of the United Nations, of the EU, of the United States, and other countries. It's time for these countries to, you know, basically look at what they're doing with their aid as kind of an investment in the future of the country. And we know from many countries around the world, not just South Sudan, that any kind of investment, any kind of aid that doesn't come along with clear and unambiguous demands for the protection of human rights is effectively means that you're putting money down a hole and into the pockets of corrupt officials, effectively. So myself, as an American citizen, as a taxpayer, I would like to be sure that my taxpayer money is going to effective and human rights promoting foreign policies and support to other countries to do that. I think that, therefore, these Western countries have a responsibility as well as, you know, it's good practice. It's good investment practice that they see that their money is going to support a country that is respecting and the human rights of its citizens and not, you know, jailing them, not abusing them, torturing them.
Your report is quite in depth, and it has revealed a lot of issues that have been happening in South Sudan. But this is not the first report that the government of South Sudan has dismissed. The government spokesperson and Minister of Information, Michael Makuei, would always say that these human rights defenders are more interested in third country solution. Hence, they will tell you anything to get resettlement. How do you react to that?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, the refugee process itself for anybody is an extremely traumatizing and difficult experience. And the idea that somehow you can fast track your way to a security place in Canada or somewhere in Europe or the United States is just false. This is true for refugees all over the world. It's an extremely difficult and almost impossible process to be sort of get to that end goal, and to think that you could come up with a strategy to get you there by just making up stories is just not true. All of the countries that do resettlement conduct thorough investigations into the claims that refugees are making, regardless of who the refugees are. But that said, in all the defenders that we spoke to for this report, all of them indicated that they would much prefer to go back, to be able to go back home to South Sudan, to be able to work without reprisal, to work without fear and intimidation and harassment, and for them, for not only for themselves, but for their families. Many of them still do have family back in South Sudan who continue to face intimidation, surveillance, harassment, because one of their family members is a human rights activist and is outside the country and still doing their human rights work. So it's just a false argument, effectively has no basis in reality.
That's Adam Shapiro, the frontline defender, head of communication and visibility. He was speaking with me here in Washington on Friday. The commissioner of Magui County in eastern Equatorial State says the police have arrested six foreign nationals involved in illegal logging in the county. Eswini Chirino reports for VOA from Juba, the loggers will be arraigned in court this week to face charges.
Magui County Commissioner David Otto says most of the illegal timber logging is carried out near the border with Uganda in bushy areas where there are neither roads nor security personnel to enforce the law. Otto says county officials have been tipped off by farmers who may have gone to till the land or collect firewood and hear sounds of high-powered machines cutting trees.
We have arrested six people from Mongalia area, as I said at the moment. They're already under the custody in Nimle. These are our neighbors from the Uganda, the residents of Amoro. We actually arrested them, the six, with one vehicle. From there, the law will justify itself.
Otto did not specify what charges the loggers will face in court, saying it will depend on further investigations. He says Eastern Equatoria State Governor Luis Labong has ordered state authorities to crack down on the unlawful cutting of trees.
We have no room for that. Somebody working on illegal logging, that is against the government law. And the state also, through our governor of the state, he has issued a decree of binding out illegal logging in the states, whereby the whole community, the citizens in Eastern Equatoria, must stop this illegal logging.
Otto says the massive clear-cutting of forests affects farmers because deforestation reduces rainfall, which affects food production across the state.
We are not going to access more rain because those trees, they've been there for a long time, and these are the trees that can actually help us. And again, it affects the issues of learning area. You know, these forests, these trees, our learning centers. Let me say, if we talk of the vegetation of the area, the beauty of our country, and these are the trees that we actually need to maintain them.
Otto says any investor who plans to engage in commercial activity in Magui County should not think about timber logging.
That's not the only investment we have. And when you have that in your mind, the government will not allow. Especially me, I will not entertain and I will not accept those activities happening to my place.
In 2019, residents of Magwe County's Ayachi Payam raised similar concerns over illegal logging in Obo Kalishoni, Palwa, Pajok, Agoro, Afiriha, Owinkibul and Obo Payams. Former State Governor Alberio Tobiolo immediately responded by confiscating the logs and auctioning them off to fund community development projects. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Some South Sudanese living abroad are adding their voices to condemn the rampant forceful land grabbings in South Sudan's Central Equatorial State by some powerful political and military officials. Jimmy Sarafino Swaka is a South Sudanese Canadian community leader in Kitchener, Ontario. Swaka says some South Sudanese in the diaspora are building a coalition to tackle land grabbing back home. He says the coalition is documenting evidences of forceful land grabbing around Juba Town for possible international arbitration. Swaka says communities in Central Equatoria are angry and frustrated because of South Sudan's government inability to stop land grabbing in and around Juba Town.
We do have a farmland that has been an ancestral farmland for so many years. The forefathers before us kind of gave it to us, and we have continued to live on it. And also, the hope is also pass it along to the generations that will come after us. And people have been coming into the land and demarcating chunks of land that they would like to sell or even take as their personal with no regard to who it belongs to. And that's one part of it. The other part is when constructions happen or even when companies or governments do construct land, there always has to be some consultation with the owners of the land and whoever is considered into the land. But that has not been the case if you know a little bit of what is happening on the ground right now. There's a road that is being built connecting Juba to Bor, and that road has just cut through our farmland. And I think that's a problem by itself. We know worldwide there always has to be a negotiation between the custodian of the land and the companies or the governments that are trying to develop something. It's not that we are rejecting, but there has to be an agreement.
There is a law in South Sudan. If someone comes to sit on your land by force, you should go to report this person to the authorities, and the law should take its course. Have you taken that step?
Our hope was that the law of the land would protect the private citizen. And as we see, with all what is happening now, we've raised those to the authorities. People are not respecting that. People are still coming in. People come in the night, demarcate land, put pegs and stuff. We come in the morning because this has been reported to the authorities, and pick out all those pegs that are being put there using the local authorities or the local law enforcement. But I mean, it just goes to show how difficult it is when the local government is not fully empowered to be able to administer this law that you're talking about. The law is supposed to protect people like us, common people. And I'm sure I'm not the only one, or we are not the only one who are affected, but a lot of people are affected in various villages all over the country, and probably specifically around Juba, I would say.
Juba is one of the towns that I consider as my home because I grew up there. And I know that the communities in Juba, specifically the Bari community, are organized in a way that they have chiefs, they have elders, they have, you know, people influential in the government. What are these people doing to address this rampant land grabbing?
The chiefs have been vocal, and they continue to be vocal, even including the youth. And I think you'll hear more about what they have been doing. And I wanted to bring a personal face to this issue. When we hear about land grabbing, people think it's just a generalized issue, but it's actually an issue that is affecting people personally. Land is a human right. It's a key human rights issue. So it constitutes the base of access to food, housing, education, and even development. Without access to land, many people find themselves in a situation of great economical insecurity and displacement.
You were in the diaspora, thousands of miles away from Juba, where this land grabbing is taking place. What legal avenues are there at your disposal here in the diaspora to address these issues?
John, that's a good question. We in diaspora are directly affected with all this because we are still connected, even though we are miles and millions of miles away from South Sudan. But we are still part of that land, part of the families and connections that we have there. From my own perspective, what we are trying to do is just to build a coalition of people who have been affected with this land-grabbing issue. We will be pursuing all possible ways to be able to echo what is happening there. And if need be, if we need to involve like human rights groups and probably sisterly countries that we're kind of living in, we're going to do so because it's something that is really seriously affecting people and their livelihoods. And we cannot just fold our hands because we are far away from these lands that we can't say anything. We have a part, and I call upon all the people who also are affected with these land-grabbing issues to join hands, regardless of where you are.
I've been following a lot of other legal issues that have not been properly addressed in South Sudan, and some of the aggrieved parties took those issues to courts in East Africa. I'm talking about the East African Court of Justice. Have your community or your group ever considered taking these issues far from South Sudan?
As we talk, we're collecting data about what is happening and who are the perpetrators of all this so that we can add our voice or, as I said, build this coalition against land grabbing and be able to bring those evidences to these bodies that are available to us. I think it's high time for us to start doing that as an individual. Of course, this is something that we're going to pursue if there is no redress from any official body to actually look into these issues. And in the short term, of course, it may cause a lot of instability, especially for women and youth, because they're the people who really feed a lot from the land. So there has to be a voice, and I believe we in diaspora have to be that voice as well. We cannot leave it to only the people who are on the ground, and this is a coalition that we need to build.
Talk to me a little bit about how your community feels in Juba. I've been reporting on this land grabbing for some time, and it appears like there is a lot of frustration, there is a lot of anger. Talk to me about the level of frustration within your community.
John, I can tell you that the frustration is very high because as much as they bring these issues to the forefront, it seems that nobody's listening to their cry. And of course, as a human being, of course, if I bring an issue to you, you don't seem to care of what I'm saying. I naturally tend to become frustrated and actually become even more agitated, to say. And that is what is happening with my community down on the ground. And if you can remember, there was these killings that happened around the Shirikat area. There was a document that was circulated and a fact-finding mission that was completed. But where are the results up to this point? We didn't see anything and nothing has happened. And it seems that nobody even cares about what happened at that time. Given all these circumstances, there has to be a frustration. I think this is an issue that will not go away. It takes dialogue, it takes negotiation, it takes a lot of ways to come to an agreement. But if there's no interest in even hearing to the plight of the people, then the anger continues to build.
That's Jimmy Serafino Swaka, a South Sudanese-Canadian community leader in Kitchener, Ontario. He spoke with me from Canada on Friday. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council has renewed commitment to defend the country's territory from foreign aggression. Addressing hundreds of members of the Sudan Armed Forces in Khartoum over the weekend, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan said Sudan will not leave any piece of land in eastern part of the country unless Ethiopian government withdraws its forces from the disputed border area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Al-Burhan says Sudanese forces shall remain in their positions in eastern Sudan until Ethiopian forces withdraw. He claims Sudanese forces have not taken any Ethiopian land, but instead they claimed Sudanese territory that had been occupied illegally by Ethiopians for years. Al-Burhan insists the government would like to see something tangible that shows commitment from the Ethiopian government to resolve the border dispute.
We need to see a practical move, action, so that we can engage in demarcating and putting things along our border. After that, if there are farmers who want to come and farm in our land, they should come and consult with local authorities. And through contracts or rent, they are able to invest just like any other investor in Sudan.
Tensions have been running high along the Sudan-Ethiopia border ever since the land dispute erupted in January. The Sudanese government said its forces had taken control of Al-Fashaga border area after weeks of clashes with Ethiopian militia forces. The Ethiopian government has accused Sudan for taking advantage of its internal war in the Tigray region to enter Ethiopian territory, loot property, burn civilian camps and kill civilians. Sudan has categorically denied these accusations of atrocities committed inside Ethiopia. Al-Burhan blames Ethiopia for making a unilateral decision to operate the Grand Renaissance Dam, a move which he says has negatively affected Sudan in many ways.
Our water supply dried up, our supply of electricity was interrupted, and our people went thirsty when they decided to close their dam without consulting Sudan. We were not ready. Our local dams along the Nile have a very specific time for opening and closing. When we realized our people went thirsty, we decided to open our dams. And to make matters worse, they also decided to open their dams at the same time, which led to flooding, destruction, killing, and we were drowned.
Al-Burhan says Sudan and Ethiopia have had strong relations for decades, and Sudan is not looking to wage any military confrontation with Ethiopia. He renewed the call of Sudan's transitional government for a peaceful settlement between Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt over the operation of the $5 billion Grand Renaissance Dam.
We don't deny the right of Ethiopia in managing its natural resources, but our rights and security should be considered as well. There are international agreements that control the use of water resources everywhere. We are committed to follow those agreements as Sudanese citizens, and we expect every country that shares with us the River Nile to do the same.
Al-Burhan admits that Sudan's differences with Ethiopia is coming at a time when the transitional government faces a number of internal and external challenges. He called on Sudanese forces to be vigilant, to defend the country when necessary, and to contribute in its development.
I need all of you to positively participate in building Sudan and defend it at all costs. We should be part and partial of the Sudanese society that feels every pain, joy, or any harm that could happen to them. We need you to stay with open eyes and minds to defend Sudanese territory.
Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt have failed to end their months-long dispute over the filling and operation of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. But all three countries have agreed to seek guidance from the African Union expert on the matter. So far, no solution has been recommended by the African Union. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's all we prepared for you today. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll now leave you with Kennedy Khamis with his song about marriage. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others against COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Be an anagon. Be an anagon. Be an anagon.
Da kuliapo kabuse.